So welcome to everybody listening now and in the future. This is The Baby is in the Shadow. And it is one of the earliest lectures that I created. And I thought that I would end this series of what are pre and perinatal dynamics with this lecture. A lot of the lectures that we've given over the last month and a half or so, we also gave in 2018, and we are quite interested in, helping people learn. And Lois and I were just building toward our training, which is full. And we really do want to educate more and more people about the baby's experience. And in this presentation, this is your orientation. So I we'll talk a little bit about the professional training and talk a little bit about how I got here. And I have a couple of case studies, and I guess this talks a little bit about current trends, but I have in here the tipping point. I think there was a tipping point that we went through in pre and perinatal psychology where people began to realize that it was a thing. And for the longest time, it was just a group of us that just sort of, once you get bitten by this pre and perinatal bug, it just takes you. And so I've noticed a lot of people have that same passion. Like we were talking about earlier, I had a woman call me, I think it was today, and just say, I've discovered this in myself, that I have a birth pattern and that if I work on it, my life gets better. And I was doing psychotherapy and it was taking me the wrong direction, really. I discovered this in myself and been working with a somatic therapist, and I think it's the best thing. And I want to make a therapy out of it. And I'm like, well, there is a therapy. And they have been pioneers all along the way. So I'm going to tell a little bit of the story. So what is pre and perinatal psychology? So when I first started, I had to come to terms with this pre and perinatal psychology. Like what really is it? It's not really psychology. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. It started out as a psychodynamic therapy, and it kind of morphed into somatic work. It was legitimized by epigenetics and neuroscience. And now we're in this phase where everything seems to be coming together. I'm going to talk about that. But here's our definition. Pre and perinatal psychology and health is the study of influences on the baby's experience from preconception through the first year of life. This includes conception, prenatal experiences, birth, and attachment. Studies have shown that ancestral health, the womb environment, how we are born and attached with our caregivers all have biopsychosocial effects that can have lifelong implications. So how does that happen, this little guy asks. Hold on a second. So we're going to talk about that. So just consider these ideas and topics in a gentle way. The stories here may help give you a container for understanding. So what I wanted to say was that this book was the book I was reading, Daring Greatly. And this quote, daring greatly means the courage to be vulnerable. It means to show up and be seen, to ask for what you need, to talk about how you're feeling, and to have the hard conversations. And it was even the other part of this where she quoted the Roosevelt quote, where it's easy to be a critic, but it's much more daring and much more wholehearted to go into the arena and actually be that person who gets dirty and falls down and fights and makes mistakes and fails. At least they're doing it. They're doing it by daring greatly. And I read this book, and I felt like I really wanted to try. Okay, people are asking me to come on. And I thought about it. I thought that I said to myself that I wanted to really go out and talk about my passion. What prevented me previously is some of our history. Like our great pioneers, Frank Lake and Stan Grof, they found birth matrices and the history through taking LSD. And this was hard for me because it wasn't evidence-based. It was based on a psychotropic medicine or tropic drug. How could you prove that there was actually memories based on that evidence or that, you know, psychotropic pattern? Even though it was consistent and people have found them over time, it was really something that I couldn't go into the Mary Ainsworth Clinic at UVA and say, gee, you know, our therapies are based on people that took LSD and decided that there are birth memories in our body. But I sat on myself for a long time, even though I had the desire to educate. So I finally got over that and I started to dare greatly. I was, even if they threw sand in my face, I was going to just do it. And then I also read this quote, like, when people know better, they do better. And it became part of what I really wanted to do, was to tell people about the baby's experience, about what I was learning. And if they could learn it and could really take it in, then it might change their lives and the lives of the people that were around them, especially if they had babies. So I felt like I wanted to do that. I wanted to tell people about that. And I went around, I started giving this talk, and while I was giving this talk, the Association for Pre and Perinatal Psychology contacted me and said, we see what you're doing, will you come and start our education department? And that was in 2013. And I created the online education program that's still there, being rapidly improved by this new staff. And I couldn't be happier with that. And it's definitely a thing now. And you can go there and take 11 modules of theory, and practice is still expanding. So this is the man I really credit for really changing how we practiced. Like I came to his therapies after I started 20 years ago. And it was in the cathartic method. Like I wish we were all sitting in a class so I could see all of you, but you know, raise your hand if you did the holotropic breath work or the cathartic method or rebirthing, or, you know, that was how we got to these memories, was through this heavy catharsis and these retreats where we would go and be reborn. And it was just a very sort of emotional, cathartic time, and people found themselves being re-traumatized. Like I was one of those people, and I still learned, and I like talking about that. I like talking about how I started, because it's important, and it's part of our history, and some people really love that catharsis, and it really helps them. So I want to give you this container for our experience. They come from Ray Castellino. Everyone here is welcome, that we're all in mutual support and cooperation with each other, that there is a prep there where if you don't want us to watch it, if you want to walk away from it, if you want to do other things while I'm talking, that's fine. And there is a way to put your hand up and call a pause. I know we have these controls down here. But if you need me to pause, I think I'll be looking to the chat. If you really want me to stop, just, you know, I'll stop. I want to live by these principles, and I have. I learned them from Myrna Martin. I'll talk about learning from her. I was one of her primary apprentices and coordinators on the East Coast for 10 years, and my family took these in. I took these in. I try and live this way, even though out in the world, we don't always slow down to the pace that Ray likes to slow down to, but I do credit him with creating these containers and really helping us understand that we do live at a slower pace in our bodies. That's right now we're working on, like, sort of self-care, is the next one, and connection and touch, making sure that people felt safe. We always would say to people, we'll ask permission to touch. But like I said, if you want to get up, walk around, that's fine. And any of the stories I'm telling here, you have my permission to tell. So really, my story about the babies in the shadow is three stories in one. It's my story of how I became a practitioner. It's the story of our growth of our field. And it's the story of babies in our culture. And halfway through, I guess in 2005, you'll see this. The science started to discover babies. So I have all these headlines that I started to collect, and I have a few in our presentation tonight. So this is me. I'm Belvedere Integrated Healing Arts. I'm also the Center for Prenatal and Perinatal Programs. I do therapy and education, and I specialize in helping families get the best possible start. These are the services I provide. The list has gotten much bigger since then, but I'm a somatic experiencing practitioner. I've studied with Anna and John Chitty. I've studied with Myrna and Ray Castellino. I've studied, I'm a certified infant massage instructor. I've done a lot of different trainings, craniosacral trainings and bodywork trainings and advanced touch trainings. It just never stops, but I love it. And that's one thing I really want you to feel about me and this work, is just how much I love it. So when I first started, this was how I tried to create a foundation and help people feel like I did have something here that was growing and on each other. And I spent many years out in the country of Vermont and living in the country there. And that's where I met Lois, who's one of my co-teachers in the pre-perinatal training. And so living out in the woods, living at a very, very slow pace, connecting with nature. I think that's a blueprint state for us and our bodies. So I offered classes of all kinds, and mother-baby dyad classes and pregnancy classes and childbirth education classes. And this is how I got my start, weaving influences together. So I had a great love for neuroscience and attachment research, and I love nature-based education and indigenous ways and body work of all kinds. I did early childhood education, so I ran a daycare for a while and did early education, preschool, kindergarten, outdoor kindergarten. So weaving all these things together is what's laid the groundwork for understanding these principles. And so in pre and perinatal psychology, we're looking particularly at the way preconception, conception, pregnancy, and birth have an impact. So humans are about patterns from the inside out, but also the outside in. It's how we come together. It's how our bodies are formed in relationship with our environment. And our first environment is our mother. Well, it was explained to me that things happen to us, and our nervous system starts developing very early, like 3 weeks in utero, and that's when the notochord develops and the nervous system begins to, to develop, and cells begin to differentiate, and they start to grow inside the blastocyst, and we're looking at experiences on the cellular level, and they've been able to discern that cells, when they have an experience and then they divide or multiply, because both happen, then that experience goes along with that cell and it just grows and grows. And it's a pattern. And how it develops is, it can create pathways. And it can, if a pathway gets ignited over and over again in our bodies, then that becomes a groove. It becomes a highway. It becomes big patterns, and nothing grooves the body more than pain. So today I was having a discussion with the Libra Brain Institute, and they talked a little bit about the experiences that mothers have that really have a big impact on babies. And one of them is loss. So if a mother loses her parent while she's pregnant, the baby feels that, and it has an adverse effect. And these are all very impersonal. That's another thing I learned about pre-perinatal work, is that a lot happens that's very impersonal. It's emergencies and interventions that have to happen or developmental sequences that happen in utero because of some hiccup or a stress that a mother goes under that's very impersonal. And then there you are with your experience, and the way babies make sense of it is that something bad about them, something's wrong with them, or it's their fault, or somehow they have to sacrifice parts of themselves. And this is all comes from my own explorations of the inside out, but also just from listening. And yes, those things can happen over time, but we've got this early foundation. So we now know so much about how to help human development by focusing on this part of our lives, this early part. And a lot of it is supporting the mother-baby dyad. So here we have this posters I created to help illustrate the baby's experience. This is the cranial nerves that form the social engagement system for the health of our nervous system and our relationship with our mothers and caregivers. And then the vagus nerve, how it innervates the whole body. And because I take care of babies, I'm a baby practitioner, I began to really want to educate moms about the baby's experience. And so I developed these posters. And I know that from doing cranial work and watching babies and understanding that we have all been born and we all have had lots of compression or getting stuck in utero, and we can have these nerves compromised. So my job with moms and babies is to restore full function to these nerves. And it can be very impersonal, but then it can be taken in this biopsychosocial, even spiritual aspects of how we are in our bodies based on our experiences. So here I wanted to show you just this from John Chitty, who was one of my primary mentors for 6 years. And he developed also a poster. You can go to his website and purchase that. This is in his book, Dancing with the Yin and Yang, which I really highly recommend. But we have these functions of the autonomic nervous system. And it's a hierarchical development, and it's called the polyvagal nervous system. And he's coded all these, and you can see it has a step-like hierarchy. Our first level of threat response is always in the social domain. So we tend and befriend. We ask our neighbor, did you hear that? Am I okay? We seek out each other. The co-regulation is a biological expectation. It's how we're hardwired. And then we have a sympathetic part of our nervous system, which can be just simple mobilization, which is life. It can also be a threat response, which is fight or flight. And then we have the parasympathetic nervous system, which is rest and rebuild, which is, again, part of that flow. But if in times of great need, it can shut us down. And I, like many of you out there, have read the polyvagal theory over and over, trying to really get it. But I really feel fluent in it now and have such a great appreciation for Stephen Porges, but also just who we are. And understanding that we have these early patterns that are in our bodies that, if we don't recognize them or help people recognize them, they can continue to create havoc in our lives. And I know this from inside out. So I'm going to tell you a little more about that. So on the left-hand side, if you're looking at the screen, you'll see we have neurons that are starting to synapse and connect. Dendrites are growing, and that's just third trimester. And then on the right is the neurons at age of 2. So you can see how all those dendrites have been growing and they've been connecting, and there's neural highways that have been laid down, pathways and streams and major arteries. You know, it depends on our experience, right? So these are quotes that we all kind of know from Hebb, neurons that fire together, wire together, that's what creates those neural nets. Neurons that fire apart, wire apart. What does that mean? I'm going to tell you little stories about that. because it's the more we are with people, and I've heard other people say this too, it's like, it's not what happened sometimes that was overwhelming, but what didn't happen when it should have. Like having a non-stress caregiver there who can help you with toxic stress, who can help you make connections, you know, and help mediate our nervous system. So when we're young, it can really be overwhelming, even just overstimulation. So parenting is really a healing pathway, and it can start in utero and preconception. So neural firing happens without cognition. Like, you're not going to tell your nerves, hey, connect with that other nerve over there. It's an implicit natural sequence that develops from stimulation or experience. So the genes are the experience is the carpenter. So genes are the architect. So, I mean, no greater place does this happen than in utero and during birth. And I've learned from the genome people that every part of our genome has an experience when we go from inside to outside. So just take that in just for a moment. Like, every one of our genes is affected by birth. And we can bring much more consciousness even now. Even though after 35 years or so of preperinatal psychology, we still have some ways to go, but we are getting closer. So here is the baby saying, I am a sentient conscious being that has big experiences in utero, during birth, and neonatally. These experiences leave imprints that affect the way I see and experience the world. So how did I get here? How did I come to sitting in this seat talking with you so passionately about this subject? It's something that really shook me up. It really turned my life inside out. I call her client zero. And I know some of you have heard me tell this story before, but basically I had a woman come to my practice. This was 1999, and she came for body work. And I was a brand new craniosacral therapist at the time. And I'd also just had my first baby, who's 21 now. And she came in and she filled out my form. I had at that time a really long intake form because I had learned all these things and I thought it was ethical. I asked all these things, and one of them was, what was your birth like? Because when you're a craniosacral therapist, you learn about compression on the cranium and patterning in the body from birth. And so she filled out my form, and then she came back and she said, you know, that question you ask about birth, well, I think it's the reason for my lifelong depression. And she proceeded to tell me that she wanted to heal this, and she wanted to heal it with me, which I thought, okay, I'm game. I didn't know that much about it at the time. And so her story was, she was a big baby, a breech baby, which means that she had her butt down and her head up. So it's a head up baby as opposed to a head down baby. Most of us are head down babies. Only 3-4% of us in this country are head up. And when you're a big breech baby, it's a scary way to be born. You know, I've subsequently learned a lot about breech because I'm a breech baby too. And so what happened was that the story was that she was in the process of being born, and her mother started to hemorrhage. And while she was hemorrhaging, the word went out into the waiting room that mother and baby were going to die. Now, I just want to name this woman survived. This is like your story. This is just not your story. It's their story. But the way the story unfolded was that the father got down on his knees and began to pray. And a nun appeared beside him, and they prayed together. And then my client, the baby, turned herself around in utero during labor. And it's just a heroic thing to do. And the turning stopped the hemorrhage. So I guess it was a placental issue. And then she was born head down. So when she came to see me, she said, you know, a lot of her sessions were always processing, my feet are in my way. My feet are in my way. And I would hold her. I didn't really know. I didn't know how to help somebody with their process. But I just held her in the craniosacral therapy, which is reminding the body constantly of the health and the resource in the body. And so while I was doing that, I started to have panic attacks. And I had no idea that that could happen. I didn't know what that was about. And I ended up calling the only person I knew at the time, who I had just met, was William Emerson. William is one of our pioneer teachers. He's now 80. And he was one of my first teacher. And he said to me, you know, if people are remembering their births on your table, then you should get trained. And I ended up going and training with his student, Carlton Terry, in 2002. But that method was the cathartic method, like I explained to you. But he redefined birth stages as imprints. And in the paper that I have, it's up in Patreon. For those of you who've come tonight, I'll send it to you as your reward for coming live. But they redefined birth stages, and they had psychological and spiritual correlates. And he and Stan Grof and Frank Lake, I mean, this was the early days when that's how we remembered our births, was through catharsis and regressed memories. And evoked great regression. So he examined egg and sperm and prenatal phenomenon as imprints too. And that's where I fall in love with this field. Like I went out and every time we went, we would explore our birth stages until the last one, which was on the prenatal period. And that's when I fell in love with birth work. I really got the sense of myself as a spiritual being and a very creative being. And I at that point I thought, I'm just hooked. I just have to go. And so what happened next was my friend Karen Strange and I were in that training in 2002, and she went ahead of me and started studying with Ray Castellino, and she would call me up and say, Kate, you really have to try this womb surround. It's a lot different than what we were doing, and it's much gentler. And me being a breech baby, I'm pretty sure I needed something less harmful. I've really learned from talking to the scientists, not just practitioners, that breech is a difficult birth pattern. And I was able to gently explore my birth patterns. I started with Myrna Martin in 2004 and went subsequently to study with Ray, with whom I'm studying now. And you can just look at the different layers of our experience. And he taught how you could slow down and begin to differentiate those layers. So this is how we describe perinatal training. This is what I went ahead and did now. I guess it's been 16 years, I guess, since I started with Myrna. And so you slow down. It's a very connected form. So it's big focus on creating coherency. So there's a big focus on health and resourcing. You start preconception with attachment. But actually now these days, we start with understanding our ancestral history, if there's been any traumas. Like, while I've been a practitioner, I've really seen this whole field come alive with understanding because of 9/11. That was one of those tipping points. I'll get to that. So then there are all these patterns, like the ancestral patterns, prenatal patterns, chemical and surgical imprints. These are all things that happen to the baby, and many different kinds of difficult births, like Lois and I. You don't have to have an emergency to have a difficult birth, or some difficult births are very fast. Sometimes you can have interventions that we think are mild, but the baby doesn't think so. Or a long birth can also be a difficult birth. And there's binds that can come up from this birth positioning. You can feel stuck. A stuck place can create a bind. And all that can be coupled with dynamics. So we begin to talk about our lives from this early time as, you know, stacked, you know, layers of experience. And they can be stacked and then compressed. So these are all the people in my life who have made a huge difference in my education. So let me just name them. And William Emerson, that's his student, Carlton Terry. I studied with him, did his foundation training. And Thomas Verney, you start to read, he's the books that you're going to read. And he's the co-founder at APA. This is Lois Treeseis, who's my midwife partner, and she and I are doing the pre-imperinatal dynamics trainings. Karen Strange, that's the woman that I talked to about that went ahead of me and said, you've got to try this new way. That was in 2002 or two, I think, yeah. Myrna Martin, with whom I studied for, was 10 years. And Ray Castellino. John Chitty was one of my primary mentors for 6 years, and I was very heavily mentored by him in understanding working with babies and state change. He was never a big fan of you must understand your early roots of trauma. He was all just about state change, understanding your states and how to shift them. And I went on and studied with Anna Chitty, whom I think that has taught some of the best classes I've ever taken in understanding how to shift states and understand trauma. Also understand how they can be coupled with deep spiritual experiences. Mary Jackson's midwife, and if you sit with her and listen to her talk, she just clarifies the whole field, and she can name the patterns and name the layers and name the baby's experience, and it just clarifies. I really love listening to Mary. I highly recommend her. And I worked for APA for 6 years and built their education department, and you can find so many resources there. Not only the education department, but their journal and their conferences, and it's just an amazing place, and it's survived and done very well, and I really highly recommend you go there. And Wendy M. McCarty, who still teaches, has written some of the best books in our field and articles, and you can go to her website, Welcoming Consciousness, and it's an amazing, wondrous beginnings, I think that's her website, but she's one of our pioneers also, who partnered with Ray in the early days and created our first bonding and attachment clinic, BABA. And Marty Glenn, whom I shall never ever forget, she's one of my mentors and also one of those pioneers, and she and Wendy M. McCarty created the graduate school in pre-pregnant psychology. And what a bright light, what a spirit. And she's just really an amazing person. She now runs retreats. If you ever want to go and do 10 days with her, she will take you into those historical places and transform them. And of course, there's David Chamberlain and his son, John Chamberlain. They also were very, very important to me. And other baby practitioners like Michelle Emmanuel and Allison Hazel Baker, the many, many babies that I've treated. There's a lot of people out here, and that gives you a little bit of a history of me. I've also studied with other practitioners now, and I just see our field growing and growing. So here's a long and winding road. This comes from an article that I published with Jean Rhodes on just our history, starting in 1924, going to Arthur Janoff. I don't know how many of you out there remember Arthur, but he kept transforming himself until he died in his 90s. And you have to admire his amazing capacity, his commitment to understanding the primal period. Stan Grof, Frank Late, breath work, Leonard Orr's work, APA, and then, we get into fetal origins of disease, and science begins to really begin to realize that babies have experiences, and that it's really important that we start to know what those are through the attachment lens, and then it got even deeper, studying monkeys and babies. The infant mental health field also is in here, and body psychotherapy. And now we're into trauma resolution, trauma-informed care, interpersonal neurobiology, somatic experiencing. And when the books started to come out about how the body bears the burden, Bob Scar's work, and, the Randall Vendicolt's work, Brenda Cole. These are really amazing practitioners started to write these books about how the body remembers. And that's how we are. That's where we are today. Here's another schematic of our summing of trends and influences. In 1924, there was the early psychoanalysis, psychoanalysts, early history, and then it became much more historical with these pioneering professionals. Then more formal channels developed, the research on attachment really developed, infant research, and then in the 1990s, epigenetics and affective neuroscience in the decade of the brain, studying neuroplasticity. And when I first started teaching all this, because I couldn't, just not, I was so passionate. Back in those days, we weren't even talking about mirror neurons. And so we've come so far. And now I feel like we're in a big integrated phase. So what were the turning points? What were those tipping places in my mind? I hope you all are doing okay out there. Y'all still with me? All right, so there is this article that came out in Time Magazine. Of course, those of us who have been living this life of realizing that the baby has experienced and saw this, and we were like, yes, they finally are starting to go out and tell our story. And we weren't in the article, but she was, this is her. This is Annie Murphy Paul. This book, of course, I got it and I couldn't wait to read it. And I read every little word. And she wrote a couple of articles in the New York Times also. And she defined how the first 9 months, even though it wasn't as heavy science as we can now, it was the beginning of really understanding that babies do have experiences and they shape the rest of our lives. There it is on a book. They said it. And it was amazing. It was a mainstream and we were cheerful. We were like, yay. Yeah. Finally, we're so tired carrying this story without connecting with our culture. And then what happened? Science discovers babies. So I began to collect things. Like I have this cover of this Newsweek and I have it framed. I have a cover of that Time magazine also. I have that framed here in my house. And so, they begin to reveal that infants' minds are much more emotionally and intellectually complex. They used to say that babies were this blank slate. They didn't feel pain, that they were just objects. They were just passengers. You begin to then really realize with all the research that they did on learning and bonding in utero that babies, they have a pretty big experience in utero. So here are some more headlines. So they began to do all these studies. I think for those of you who are passionate out there like me, I guess you've been tracking these two. Babies prefer helpful to unhelpful social types. Do you remember this study where they had two puppets, a puppet was pushing something up a hill, another puppet was pushed it down, another puppet helped it, and they had the babies, pick a puppet. Of course, they picked the helpful one. I love this title, Infants Stun Scientists with Amazing Insights. Babies Only Look Clueless, right? Babies Unlock the Ordinance of Morality. Like, this became out of Yale's baby lab. It made 60 Minutes, and I began to see these things happening over and over again. Research, infant laboratories popped up everywhere, and people began to realize that babies are amazing. Some more titles, newborn babies, maybe more developed than we think. And then I found these quotes from Laura Schultz. I don't know her. Laura, if you're listening, I'm sorry if this is too much to say about you, but I loved your quotes. She described this period of time as an infant revolution in science, that babies know much more about the world than we previously believed. They have a lot of prior knowledge right from birth, but of course it's not just from birth, it's from their experience in utero, not just birth, and they're very sophisticated. So, of course, I've always wanted to meet Elizabeth Spelke. This is one of the preeminent infant laboratories. Elizabeth's been doing this a long time. And she began to, her team found that humans are born with a range of skills, that our prejudices can be formed within the first few months. She and other baby researchers, infant researchers, really began to delineate, to describe, to publish how we are just these amazing beings, and we have innate knowledge that comes from our experience in utero. So then the movie In Utero came out, and here's the quote from Gabor Mate.
Intrauterine life is not a paradise, as some people try to make us believe.
This substance, which is the potential of a human being, feels every little feeling that the mother feels.
We are the receiver of all the happiness and of all the difficulties of our parents.
This is something that we're just beginning to explore gene by gene.
We're really pushing back that time frame to say that there are factors environmentally that happen prenatally.
Human beings are affected by the environment as soon as they have an environment. And that means as soon as we're implanted in the womb.
In our society, there's so much rushing. You're so busy, everything going, going, going.
Fetuses of mothers who are high anxious, they're showing differences almost, we want to say, in temperament.
We see reduced brain volume, reduced gray matter density.
People are conceiving, carrying, and birthing children under increasingly stressed conditions. Stress that affected one generation will be played out very exactly in the next generation.
People have been through wars, famine, disasters of all sorts.
When we see dysfunction in people, we're actually seeing the imprint of that early experience.
An adult trauma is really a fetal trauma.
And this has been the missing piece, the foundation for our whole life.
When you come to a point of knowing what is the cause of all this, when you have an answer, like the door opens.
So that film came out, I think, 4 years ago, and it really brought home that how we are sensitive beings, perceptive, sensory, and super sentient, as John Chitty would say, with a lot of capacity. So I'm smart, I'm ethical, and I'm moral. So in our culture, we have tipping points. I feel like we are. We did have them. And I'm there marking time. I want people to get it. Like, there's nothing more true for me than this, because I felt it in my body. And I kept looking for the truth of it. Like, I wanted the evidence. I wanted to show that the babies have experiences, and I wanted people to join me, and I wanted people to start to change practices. I wanted people to start supporting our mothers more. I mean, there's a lot of things that I continue to still do, but this was, I guess, in the early 2000s. I was really wanting to find a way to make a bigger difference in the world and with these mother-baby dyads. So I've been documenting this. So here's the tipping points. We know that the children have adverse experiences, and this is a very big study. And the person that introduced all this to me was a woman named Terry Manel. And she didn't know it at the time. She does now, because she's become one of my friends. But I was just looking, trying to understand what happened. Now a lot of us know about these adverse childhood experiences, that they really very much affect our nervous system and how we develop. Our nervous system gets disrupted. We have adaptation patterns that we develop, that some of them are very unhealthy, even though they are a healthy response to overwhelm, like mostly into addictions, but they can lead into inflammatory conditions and a lot of disease and then early death. So these are the 10 things they studied in adverse childhood experiences. But now we know from the scientists even that study babies in neurodevelopment that our adverse experiences can start even preconception. So here we do, we have babies feel pain. This is the Sunni Anand, who's the neonatologist who was studying how babies, we used to not give anesthesia to babies that had surgery. And it was his research that really began. He documented how babies felt pain and how even that feeling of great pain could kill them. And I thought he's been very, very brave. And the woman that wrote about him was Terry Manel, and she wrote this paper. It was published in the APA Journal. And she had been documenting her experience when she had surgery as an infant. And so that paper just, I mean, that blew me away. And I was said, all right, I'm going to go around telling people about the baby's experience. And that paper is so well written, and it documents how babies do feel pain and how there was a systematic way that we ignored that and we really hurt people and babies. And Terry has documented at least 10 million people in our country, I think in just our country, that had these early adverse, painful experiences, and they're carrying them in their bodies. And Terry tells her story, and there are other people that have a similar story. Another tipping point was the post-traumatic stress in babies. This is the 9/11 events, where they began to study babies that were in utero during that time, and they found that the cortisol levels matched their mother's levels, and they found that these babies that were born showed that they had PTSD. So we know that now that adverse experiences during pregnancy will very much affect the babies. So, and then there was stories like this one, the Unabomber.
I think he was, if you could call a baby that, he was an activist, you know. He liked to be held all the time, you know. He liked to feel somebody's arms around him. He was able to love back. But afterwards, no. All they could see were the physical problems or absence of problems. They didn't seem to be very responsive to how a child felt emotionally. I don't think there is much research on how babies feel about things. Well, at first, he would cry, and he would reach out to me, and I'd hug him. But as time went on, he became more and more aloof and distant, and didn't respond to me. It's as if he didn't believe that I would come back, and that I could take him home. Well, how can a nine-month-old baby, how can he know that, or how can he understand that when you try to tell him? So each time that I went, the distance, the aloofness was worse, until he ended up like a rag doll, you know, just limp and completely unresponsive. Every minute we had at home was spent, you know, holding him, talking to him, trying to stimulate some sort of response. He became very interested in things, but no response to people.
Not even to you?
Not even, oh no, me, worse than ever. You know, I was the one, as far as he could understand, a nine-month-old, you know, was that I abandoned him in the hospital. I let a stranger take him away, and I did nothing about it. It was very troubling. Very troubling to have a child that you loved very much, but was so distant.
So that is the story of the Unabomber. And if you listen to his mother talk about what happened to him, I mean, he just went really into complete immobilization collapse, we call it. Sometimes in somatic experiencing world, that's called ragdoll. And she even uses that word. And it became an imprint. And in his mind, he was hospitalized. They weren't allowed to touch him. And at a very important window of opportunity in his brain at the 9 month, 9 to 10 months, which is when that stranger danger comes on. And he must have, imagine what it must have been like for him inside of him. When just thinking about, but back then they didn't know that babies had such experiences and that there are all these imprints that can happen. And that was a pretty big imprint that he never overcame and went on to develop, fears and aggression and the ways that, that story unfolds. But that's a very good book, Scared Sick. It's an intense book, and it's one of the textbooks that we use at APA. And I highly recommend it. I highly recommend a lot of different books. If you email me, I can definitely fill up your house filled with books. So this just says, I'm sensitive, but I also want you to feel that babies are joyful too. They're naturally joyful. They're hardwired for delight and connection and joy. So please just give your nervous system a moment and take in the joy of this baby.
One, Micah.
Okay, so you get the picture. We're naturally open and loving, and we're also joyful and we're resilient as well. So in my discussions with researchers, they tell me, please make sure you give people that message, that we're neuroplastic, that we can create conditions for healing. That's what trainings are about. The first thing we have to do is recognize the patterns that happen for babies, and then we can create conditions for healing. That's our job as therapists, and we're more and more realizing these. And often these early states, once you start to repattern the earliest states, who we truly are can emerge, our true essence, our true nature, our magic, if you will, our spiritual aspects, and then can be integrated into our lives in a really beautiful way. So I have a couple of case studies, which I'm not sure I'm gonna have, I really wanna take the time to go through because I know it's getting late, but I often tell these stories, these two case studies. The first one is the baby that did not sleep She came to me because her mother came to me. I guess I'll tell them briefly. It's just, she came because she couldn't sleep. It's very common. I have a baby that can't sleep. And the mother is at her wit's end because she hasn't slept also. And her story was that she was a premature birth, and she had a premature rupture of membranes, which is a very difficult pattern. It often leads into interventions, which can lead to a cascade of interventions, which can lead to a C-section. So when a mother comes in and says to you, well, I had this premature rupture of membranes, you can just say, hey, you know, that's a very difficult pattern. And we don't even know why it happened. So here this woman had a premature rupture, was a very wanted baby, and her husband happened to be out of town. And so she ended up at the hospital without any trial of labor. Labor didn't start. And she was with a doctor that was scared, and she was scared. And they started her on Pitocin. She wanted a natural birth. And so she ended up with an epidural because the doctor threatened C-section if you don't dilate. And she wasn't dilating because she was really struggling with the Pitocin. For those of you out there who've had Pitocin, just remember it's not at all like regular contractions and can be very difficult. If a woman labors without pain medicine, she's just heroic when it comes to Pitocin. But she did get the epidural. She did give birth. The baby was taken and put under the bilirubin line, so there was separation. And she did end up having a tongue tie that was clipped at 10 weeks. So what I did was I listened to both the mom and the baby. And the mom would tell me the story and periodically cry and cry. And I would hold her with my hand. And then for the baby, I put the baby on the mother. We did something called supported attachment. And I had the baby crawl to breast. Often when they call to breast, they'll tell you the story. And she just told us the story. She constantly talked to us. It wasn't crying, yelling, or screaming. It was talking. And I just listened and I affirmed, just like I did to the mother. And when she got to breast, she continued to talk. I ended up holding her in the craniosacral therapy. You know, both mom and baby fell asleep on my couch. And then they got up and got dressed and left. And I worried about that mother, but the next day she emailed me and said the baby fell asleep around 7:30 and slept all the way till 3:30. So you're looking at like an 8 hours sleep, and then woke up, nursed for 20 minutes and slept for a few more hours. So, you know, this is a description of the kind of work that I do, where you are affirming the mother, you're acknowledging the difficulty, you're using your hands and your presence to slow the pace, receive the family, create a safe container, listen to the baby, get the baby's story, help them in their body, remind them of their health, and then help them reorient to the health. So sleep and feeling safe and connection. And then this story is another story I tell often. He had an overwhelming childhood. And when he came to me because he had his children and they cried a lot. And he was ashamed of how rageful he got. So we unpacked his history. We worked with a felt sense of what it felt like in his body for his memories and what happened to him when he had was with his children. And there is this polarity of freeze and, you know, and fire, freeze and rage. And I was able to use somatic experiencing to help release the patterns. But one of the things I like to tell about the story is that I had him remember. I said, can you remember, you know, just see if you can just get a sense of who you were before you came into form. This man was a minister. So he closed his eyes and said, I feel like a golden ball of light being held by a benevolent being. And I asked him, you know, what it felt like in his body. And then I asked him if he would consider just floating over where he was conceived and see what drew him into form. And at first he said no, and so it was too scary. So then I put him on the him on my table and did the craniosacral therapy. And I asked him again, and he said, yeah, I feel so beautiful, the natural world, so beautiful. And he said, there's fresh open spaces, fresh air, lots of opportunity. And I get this feeling in my body like, yes, and I jump. That's how he came into form, was this leading to be here on planet Earth. And he was so expressive. I took a lot of notes, and I tell his story, and I asked him, is there any time in his life on planet Earth where he felt that way in his life? And he said, well, yes, you know, now. He was visiting from another country, and he said, I feel like it's now. There's beautiful land here in Virginia, fresh open spaces, lots of fresh air, lots of opportunity, and I just feel this big yes. And it was as if that moment of recognizing his spiritual essence and his current day experiences, there was an integration coming together, and he felt such forgiveness for his parents and his early difficult life. This is the kinds of work that I do. And this is what happens when you are able to really meet people and have them really remember who they really are. So I like to just to end our discussion tonight, or end our presentation, with some of the resources. So this was back, I wrote this, remember, in 2013. So Dan Siegel had been creating resources like crazy. He still is. And then this is Peter Levine and his books, Trauma and Memory, I just added. That's a newer one. And then All Around Biodynamic Craniosacral Therapy. I think that's one of the most important skills. There's three of them. Here they are. In my mind, somatic experiencing, somatic trauma healing. Doesn't have to be SE, but as long as it's got that aspect of understanding how to work with the body in the felt sense. The body work aspect, craniosacral therapy, full spectrum. So, I mean, I also would say deep touch, moving touch. Squeezes. I do a lot of little squeezes on people, like really knowing touch skills. But the craniosacral therapy gets to that deeper place in people, the health in their system, that reminds them of who they really are, that they have this place of consistent, slow tempo, folding and unfolding, you know, widening and getting smaller, you know, spiraling. It's all in our body, and to be reminded of that is craniosacral, and then the perinatal therapies. And when I'm teaching and I'm working with parents, I often will bring in that they are positive imprints, and if you can find them in the now, you can orient them to your body. And these are the ones that I think I got this from Myrna, this list. But there are other lists that have been developed now that help us feel our neuroplasticity. And this is just one of them. And so when I end my talks, I like to give, like, what is it that you can do? I know I've given you a lot of information tonight. And so what you can do is help a pregnant mom, help her feel heard and safe and seen and understood, promote relaxation. There's something called the love break, which Fred Wirth was a neonatologist, promoted. And that's just taking a moment and sitting quietly, listening to music, and communicating with your baby. No separation of mom and baby at birth, skin to skin, and then working with creating safe haven, secure attachment. That can be a challenge, but that's parenting as a healing journey. So we're looking at constellations as a map to steer by when it comes to our early time. So I've made this map for you. This is ideal, right? I want you to get that word in your head. This is ideal. Mom and dad are conscious. They prepare for the baby. Lovemaking is tender and intentional. Conception and implantation are easy. Baby is welcomed on discovery with no ideation about termination. The placenta is in a good spot. There's little stress in the lives of the parents. Good prenatal care, optimal births, There's a breast crawl after the birth, where the baby has a chance to rest and then crawl to breast. The neonatal period is relaxed and uneventful. The ancestral lineage of the family is secure, attached with no disease. So what I really want you to get is that we all live with variations of what is normal. And this variation is our pattern. And our job is to become aware of our pattern. And as professionals, we become a part of what is optimal. So to complete, I want to tell you that the baby, I think, is emerging from the shadow. I attended this international symposium on the fetal brain, and its specialty was pregnancy stress and depression and its impact on the developing brain. And these are some of the slides. And these are not pre and perinatal psychologists. These are fetal medicine doctors and obstetricians and pediatricians. And so, you know, we can ask the fetus questions. They say, what happens in the womb shapes the lifespan, right? And then I have this quote, which I've lifted for you so you can see what the quote is. But at first, the step is the first step is always what matters most, particularly when we are dealing with the young and tender. This is the time when they are taking shape and when any impression we make leaves a permanent mark. That's from a book. I have the quote later on. I'll give it to you. But I couldn't believe this was on the screen at the Fetal Medicine Institute, the Fetal Brain Institute. And we're looking at now caring for our mothers. They said at that conference that looking at the fetus's experiences, the baby's experience, was too late, which, I mean, I can't tell you, like, wow, they've got it. And then they're going full speed ahead with this idea that we've got to help our moms preconception and understand their trauma histories and looking at changing culture and helping our women and girls and helping our men not be so stressed. And I mean, they've got it and they're taking the ball and they're running with it. And these are some of the findings. There's some new data on placenta, how important that is, and that boys are more vulnerable than girls, that there are complications that cause neurodevelopment disorders that appear later in life. And I talk with them at length about that even today. What does that mean? And there's a lot of data now. And they told me on the phone that more research needs to be done and more connection with practitioners like myself to help develop those practices. But those complications include preeclampsia. They include diabetes in our parents. They include breech births and hypoxic births and C-sections. And they all have important genomic information, genomic events that can push our genome into neurodevelopment disorders. And ADD, HD, autism. They found that creating placental health is really important, that really managing stress was really important. They also showed how taking SSRIs, like these serotonin reuptake inhibitors, they affect the cerebellum. And I can't tell you, that's a very important part of the brain for emotional well-being and connection. And, you know, there is so much at that conference, and I'm just wanting to broadcast that everywhere. So here's that quote, that the first step is always what matters most. It's when we're dealing with our very young and tender. Anything at that time can make an impression and may make a permanent mark. We know that early adversity does make a mark, but it may not be permanent. We have practices that can repair our earliest adversity. We have the data now. Preperinatally, we've been working with therapies, and with all that we've gone through over the last 15 years with the development of Peter Levine's somatic experiencing and Hakomi and body psychotherapy and working with the felt sense and body works and cranial psychotherapy and the womb surround processes and just really understanding that babies have experiences, we have the tools. We just have to develop those practices, and that's what I'm all about. We're filling in the gap between research and policy, and that is our next step. Okay, this is me winding down. These are the trainings that I'm offering. And okay, so I'm going to stop it there, and I'm going to stop the recording, and then I can give you guys a chance to.